If anyone could calculate the effect of 200 hydrogen bombs upon the uppermost layer of the ionosphere, he would want to shout from the housetops to put an end to this folly. Unhappily, my friend, Earth is in the hands of raving lunatics. They are unbalanced enough to accuse us of lying if we tell the truth. Evil must come, but woe to him who commits it. His fate is sealed. He should not imagine that he will not be called to account for lives he has sacrificed to one interest or another. We all expect a day of reckoning, when we shall be called upon to account for the gifts that the Creator gave us. The good need not worry, because God will know how to deliver them in the hour of peril. The just will not suffer for the sinner. This only happens once, and it happened a long time ago. If it were so decided, we ourselves could evacuate Earth and remove the worthy from it. We have thousands of saucers, each one capable of carrying thousands of people. However, we cannot intervene unless this be decided from on high, when we would be told whom to deliver from this hell. Rest assured that the just shall not be forsaken, because unseen eyes watch over this little planet and they know full well who acts without evil intent. Pick up your Bible, and read how Lot was delivered from Sodom when it was about to be destroyed, and see the parallel. Read, also, how Enoch and Elijah were carried up in a chariot of fire. There is therefore no difficulty at all about this, and if we were to receive such an order we would carry it out to the full. Furthermore, if it were decided from on high that Earth ought to be destroyed, we would trust in the wisdom of this decision and carry out the orders without hesitation. We would never question them. We would do as Abraham did, when he was ready to sacrifice his son to do the will of God. We could, in a second, raise this planet and leave nothing alive on its surface. The planet would be sacrificed in the twinkling of an eye. We have the means and we know how to use them. If Earth, after only a century of scientific progress, can develop so great a destructive power, how much greater must ours be, for at a time when Earth's people had not even attained to knowledge of mathematics, we were already making interplanetary voyages, with cosmic energy for propulsion. But could this happen? Would anyone be capable of ordering our destruction? Perfectly well. It is not right that man's folly should endanger the stability of the planetary system and destroy the lives of others far away. The entry of a new sun into our system will be less dangerous than the explosion of the Earth's hydrogen cover. It would wreak havoc on several inhabited planets. The unbalance of forces would be fatal to many, if it happened suddenly. Then there would only be one preventive measure, destruction of all living matter of Earth. It would be rendered sterile in a matter of seconds. However, I am not in a position to make decisions of such magnitude, nor, for that matter, is any inhabitant of any planet. The time has come for scientists to stop and think, for man to cease thinking of himself as the lord of creation and come down from the pedestal his vanity has put him on, and realize that as he has been in the habit of oppressing the weak, the time could well come when someone stronger shall silence him. The conquest of other planets and the subjugation of their inhabitants has already been mooted. This is the height of human impertinence. It would also be suicide. We would like to draw the attention of these people to the chapter of Isaiah which reads as follows, "How thou art fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning, for thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds, I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit." Isaiah 14:12-15. We could also remind you of what happened to the men of Babel who tried to reach the heavens with their tower. Today this tower again threatens the heavens, and is represented by earthly science. Let us hope there will be no need for us to knock it down. So long as men waged their petty wars of conquest, we tolerated it all. We merely kept our distance, avoiding further contact with those who could not understand us. Now man constitutes a serious risk for everybody, and tomorrow it may be worse. I do not know how all this will end. I do not even know whether men will mend their ways, and far less whether a superior intelligence will go on tolerating them much longer, or will resolve to act. I am a being of very limited attainment, and it is not within my grasp to say what should be the fate of earthly things. But it is time for man to stop and think. A little thought costs nothing. Enough of this folly. Away with these crimes. His salvation is our salvation. May he not force us to an act of desperation. May he not lead us into evil. May he not bring us to the violence which we so thoroughly condemn and which we would eternally rue. Let him live and allow us to live. We know your affairs better than you know them yourselves. We know when the war leaders meet and what they plan. We are present at your cabinet meetings. We know the hypocrisy with which they exchange platitudes. We read their motives. Rest assured that we would act before they endangered us. We have orders to defend ourselves. We have done everything possible to show that there are powers superior to those on earth. We wished to show men that the possession of power does not give rein to violence and that we have no desire to seize the planet. We have flown high, low, singly and in formation. We have performed aerobatics over cities, air bases, fortifications. I personally received an order to move in against an armed aircraft which was rash enough to open fire against my craft. But nothing convinces men on Earth. Let him continue along the atomic road he is following. One day the end must come. Someone, either we, or man himself, will press a button to end the story of a humanity which preferred to die rather than to live happily in accordance with the laws of God. Life on other worlds. Q. Are all the planets inhabited? A. Some are and some are not. In our system the following are inhabited: Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Uranus, Neptune and Pluto. Jupiter and Saturn are not inhabited, as they have no atmosphere. Jupiter has one, but we cannot consider it as such, as it has virtually no depth, and Saturn has none at all. It is a sphere of low density, almost entirely composed of heavy gases, with a small solid center. It is a world in formation. As it solidifies, it will contract, liberating the elements that will eventually form its atmosphere. It could be that the entry of another sun into our system will bring about a cracking process, by which the denser elements will be precipitated. Jupiter, also, is a new body which recently developed a rarefied atmosphere. However, it is still unsuitable for life. As these bodies become more dense, they will move closer to the gravitational center of our system, in view of the fact that their diameters decrease and their density increases. They will thus be increasingly subject to attraction, and decreasingly subject to repulsion. However, many of Jupiter's and Saturn's satellites are inhabited. Q. But can Mercury support life, when it is so near the Sun? A. Certainly. Its great etheric mass filters the rays of the Sun. A. Bear in mind that whereas Earth's etheric covering extends a mere 250,000 miles, Mercury's extends 390,000 miles. God or nature, whichever you like to say, covers bodies to keep out cold, but in our case the opposite takes place. The greater the heat, the greater the covering. If you calculate the speed of solar rays in space as I showed you by checking the difference between the luminosity of the rising sun and the sun at zenith, with the equatorial radius of the Earth as a base, you will see that Mercury, subject to more intense radiation, has been given an etheric covering exactly large enough to filter these rays to a point where they fill into the visible spectrum on reaching the surface of the planet. From the calculation we made together, you saw that the farther bodies are from the Sun, the less covering they have, until we come to Saturn, which has none at all. Up to that point, the ether and atmosphere are there to filter the rays of the Sun day from Saturn outwards. However, the planets again acquire an etheric cover on an increasing scale, no longer with the object of filtering the sun's rays, but to produce a positive reaction to them, so as to provide sufficient heat to maintain life. So the atmospheric and etheric compositions of these planets are not the same as those of planets on this side of Saturn. The amount of diffused light is much greater than on Earth. Their atmosphere, though rarefied, is a good conductor of heat, which may seem absurd to you. Q. I find it hard to see how a distant planet can have an atmosphere sensitive to the rays of the Sun, in view of the tiny fraction of light they receive. A. There are many kinds of light. Its origin can also be chemical. Certain species of vegetation emit light under bacteriological action. Insects produce quite a strong light by utilizing their own internal enzyme reactions. You can make cold light by electrical discharges through gas. Why then deny that nature has other methods of giving life to a planet? Put an electric charge through a tube of hydrogen and it will produce a bluish light. Mix other gases with the hydrogen and you will obtain other kinds of light. What more spectacular demonstration could one wish for than that which takes place when one mixes a small quantity of chlorine with water, and then subjects the mixture to a ray of light? This will give rise to a violent explosion and emission of light and heat. If similar reactions were produced within the atmosphere of the planets, a very small ray of light could produce a tremendous reaction with vast magnetic storms. Q. Have the beings on these planets a material form? A. What do you expect them to be made of? They cannot be made of energy because only spirit is energy. Q. But is our constitution very different from that of the people of other planets? A. There are differences, but the human form is nature's chosen form. The metabolism of a man from Pluto is not precisely the same as that of an inhabitant of Mercury. Nevertheless, one can visit the other and remain alive for a long period. A fish lives in a dense medium, but can keep itself alive for a certain time by breathing air. But the difference between Pluto's and Mercury's atmospheres is not nearly as great as that between air and water, so one could stay alive a long time. Q. But has gravity no effect? A. None. Gravity is an illusion, like others you entertain. We discussed how gravity is a combination of phenomena, wherein an important part is played by the atmospheric covering which is responsible for differences in density. But we also came to the conclusion that all inhabited planets have an atmosphere, so the difference is a small one. All have warmth, too, either by solar radiation or by chemical reaction. The principal factor in gravity is the vertical component of magnetism, but the difference between one planet and another is insufficient to prevent interchange between people of different planets. Q. As regards appearance, what are the chief differences between the people of the various planets? A. We cannot say, for example, that the people of Mercury are tall or short. There are all sorts, as you have pygmies. However, their maximum stature is 5 feet 10 inches. They are strong, dark, intelligent, energetic and active, with small eyes, no beards, low foreheads, well-made noses. On Venus they reach 6 feet. They belong to various races, predominantly a fair type. Their bodies are well made, but they are the most like Earth people, both in appearance and in spirit. They are energetic, talkative, kindly, and above all, spiritually minded. On Mars there are 2 root races, one fair and one dark. The fair race is the most tractable and gentle. The dark race is composed of people who are short of stature and of a lively disposition. They are the gayest in the planetary system. There is no life on Jupiter, only on its satellites. But there is a great variety of life on these heavenly bodies. There are all sizes, from men of 7 feet 4 inches down to Lilliputian beings. But we all live in the same family. The little people are in the majority. There is no life on Saturn either. Due to its lack of atmosphere, its surface will be riddled with meteorites. 2 of its satellites are inhabited. The men are intelligent and kind. They have their spacecrafts, but they do not use them much. For you these beings would be quite inexplicable because they never die. They possess what one might call the body of resurrection. They never commit any sin, yet they are material beings. They are tall, with large magnetic eyes. Not even we can fathom all their wisdom, they are enigmatic. On Uranus and Neptune the inhabitants are very similar. They are tall and muscular, well built, with large eyes and very well developed heads. Organically they function in a different way from the inhabitants of other planets. They do not feed on heavy substances as we do, but on liquids or gases, and their blood is different. On Pluto life is very similar to that on Earth. The people are identical in nearly everything. But notwithstanding their advanced intelligence, they incline to evil and neglect God. They allow their baser instincts to rule them. They learned to travel through space a long time ago. They do not war among themselves. War, alas, only exists on Earth. But they are dangerous beings, and any instances of sorcerers doing harm to people on Earth can be attributed to them. The only reason they do not harm any other inhabitants of the system is because they know that these other beings are more evolved, and any attempt at conquest would be fatal. But their fate is sealed. The people of Earth have committed many misdeeds, and this planet is regarded as the center of evil, but its inhabitants are yet in their infancy, and in the dawn of their intelligent life, with the exception of a small elite who have settled down here as teachers. For this reason, God will punish humanity, but with moderation, without expelling this planet from the solar system. Those who cannot adjust themselves to the higher order of things will be evacuated from the planet, leaving it in the possession of others who will be like the inhabitants of the satellites of Saturn. As for Pluto, justice will take its full course. Evil will not be allowed to continue indefinitely. The transgression of law is not a natural phenomenon, because if it were a basic condition for the evolution of individuals of various worlds, then it would itself become a law. It is absurd to think that evil should itself be a law. There are only two tenets that can claim immortality on any inhabited world. These are love of God and love of one's neighbor. Anything that departs from these tenets is a transgression. The inhabitants of Pluto were fully aware of divine laws, but chose to ignore them. They became prey to sexual pleasure and as a direct result of this laid themselves open to other sins such as idolatry, sodomy, rebellion and disrespect for the physical integrity of others, and so fell under the whole sway of evil. It is like an avalanche, which can start off with the fall of a small stone, and finish up as a complete landslide. For this reason, Pluto will be torn away from this system, and will wander towards the nearest constellation. Its inhabitants will suffer untold horror and will not be able to escape. They will be degraded to the state of cavemen under atrocious conditions. The splendor of their cities, their rapid transport systems, brilliant lighting and communications and, in fact, all that a highly intelligent humanity can attain to through millennia of constant progress, beyond your imagination, will be written off and crumble into ruin like historical Babylon, with its hanging gardens. Then our system will return to normal and we shall become as one large family, all under the banner of love. Q, as far as I can gather from your statements, Earth will be left with a humanity similar to the inhabitants of Saturn's satellites. Does this mean human beings will be changed? A, this is exactly what I wanted to convey. Human beings have gone as far as they can go. Their intelligence cannot go beyond the normal senses. You talk in terms of biological evolution, but let us see if this is true or not. There should be a pari passu development between intelligence and the physical body if this theory were true. Whereas intelligence has reached a high stage of development, the body has been attacked by strange diseases which are on the increase. We thus get a picture of mental development accompanied by physical atrophy. The human race has reached a point in its development where it should disappear. Races are like men with their infancy and adolescence, maturity, old age and death. The physical body as it is would not give intelligence very much more room for development. Earthly science and techniques will reach such an advanced stage that the brain will no longer be able to cope with the problems involved, which may have to be done by machines. Does this imply that inanimate machinery is superior to spirit? Not at all. But this requires the appearance of a new race on Earth, composed of beings with sufficient brain power to grasp all the increasingly complex problems associated with progress. These bodies would have the capacity to take a further step along the path to wisdom. How can you talk of indefinite progress when you are bound to a body of limited capacity and of a low order? It is wrong to say that nature does not progress by sudden leaps. Its progress is based almost entirely on this, as, for example, in the chemical combinations of carbon and hydrogen. Knowledge is garnered until, at a given instant, there is an integral transformation of brain and body. If one adds an atom of hydrogen to an atom of oxygen, the result is still a gas, but if a further atom of hydrogen is added, there is a sudden transformation and they cease to be gases and turn into liquid. The same thing happens in the case of carbon and hydrogen. CH2 is a gas, and we can go on adding to either element without anything happening until we get to C2H4, when there is a sudden transformation and the gas changes its characteristics radically. There was no gradual change in the gas, but it preserved its characteristics until sufficient elements were added to bring about the sudden transformation. In life, the process is the same. Many races are buried in the life cycle of a planet. Earthly science, believing in natural selection, sought for the links in the chain of evolution. It did not find them, and never will find them, because they do not exist. It finds many things which are not links, which proves their non-existence. It is strange that all races have left their traces on Earth, except those that constituted the links in the evolutionary chain. Why should nature have played such a trick to hide them if everything that exists is for man's enlightenment? This, therefore, is not what happens. When a race is no longer capable of keeping up the struggle against constantly changing climate and circumstance, then the race disappears like any other living thing. If a sun has its old age and disintegration, then why should this not also apply to a race? What is impossible for man is easy for God. He can cause a planet to be inhabited in a moment. Q. But how can a planet come to be inhabited if all its people have perished? A. God performs an act of resurrection. Q. How? A. Spirit acts on matter and fashions it to its will. In seances where such superphysical phenomena are commonplace, the spirit manipulates the ectoplasm of a passive agent and molds from it a body which is visible to the living. Its organism is real and its activity can be controlled. It has all the organs that a normal individual has. After manifestation, the ectoplasm is generally reabsorbed by the passive agent, and disappears. However, it would only need an act of will on its part to continue living a life of its own. In many of these cases of manifestation, hairs and pieces of clothing have been left and preserved intact. If such fragments can remain in existence, there is no reason why a whole body should not remain. It would only have to sever its connection with the passive agent. If God were to ordain that a new race should populate the earth, the spirits could manipulate the ectoplasm of the earth itself and create bodies from it, far superior to those of the present race. These new beings would have fantastic bodies and brains. This is the act of resurrection I spoke of. If ordinary spirits of a lower order can mold a body in accordance with their will, how much greater then would be the power of God, should he decide to repopulate the earth? Q. Does this mean to say that the present race came into being in this way? A. There is no doubt about it. Adam was in fact molded from the dust of the earth, that is to say, from its ectoplasm. The ancient race had used up the whole of its evolutionary energy, and there had to be an intervention of the heavenly powers which created the new race. This event is very clearly depicted in the case of Eve. God caused Adam to fall into a deep sleep, using him as the passive supplier of ectoplasm, and the body of Eve was molded from this. She was, indeed, flesh of Adam's flesh, and the biblical narrator is correct when he stated that woman was molded from Adam's rib. Q. But is not ectoplasm a byproduct of the nervous system? How could it be drawn from the earth? A. Everything is drawn from the earth. Vegetables also have their ectoplasm and their roots draw it up from the soil. If any power were capable of forming a new body, surely it would draw the necessary elements for it from the ground. It would be a slight on the powers of the Supreme Spirit to think that he who made matter should not also have the power to make ectoplasm. Q. If there were an atomic disaster, and the planet became uninhabitable, how could the spirit mold new bodies that could keep alive? A. Life could well be impossible for the body as it is now, but on the other hand it could be ideal for other bodies. God creates types of beings to suit the medium in which they are placed. Earthworms live in the same world as man, but the soil is their ideal medium. Fish live in water. The amphibian can live in air or water. The eagle prefers heights where the atmosphere is rarefied. If life now manifests itself in various forms, do you think nature has run through her repertoire and exhausted her possibilities on Earth? A lion would die in the Arctic, whereas a bear is quite happy there. Whether the Earth is covered with ice, whether it becomes too hot, whether it is radioactive or not. Nature will in every case devise an appropriate life form. And if nature, with this wonderful power of creation, was supplemented by a spiritual power, what marvels could it not perform? Man will have to disappear from the face of the earth, and Homo sapiens will be replaced by spiritual man, so long as he allows nature to effect this transformation quietly on her own. When the first man of the present race, who was the resurrection of a dying race, made his appearance on the planet, there were still some men of the old race left who were dying off. There was no total disappearance of living beings from the planet. However, Homo sapiens appears to be in a hurry to get to the end of his career and to deprive nature of its right to put an end to him by exhaustion. Perhaps it is just because he is bent on self-destruction. Farewell. We met at the Roosevelt Station in Sao Paulo. To begin with, we continued our discussion on various scientific subjects, and later talked about ethics and religion. Then he said to me, "Now I am going. If you wish to see me again, meet me on Ang at Ube Avenue between November 14th and 17th, 1956. Should there be any hitch from your side, I will see you again in 1959 if you are still here. Once again I shall keep my word. I should like you to always remember one thing. Do not attach too much importance to all the scientific things we have talked about. Science is only a means of giving us certain facilities, and of teaching us how to use the forces of nature. Seek that science which will bring happiness to all, and above all seek God, because only He has meaning in the universe. Love is the true science. What shall it avail man if he knows all things and all the secrets of the universe, if he should lose his soul? Science is like a law. It is only beneficial when it guarantees the rights of man, and when it protects, shelters and serves him. If it loses its protective character and becomes oppressive, then it is time it was abolished and replaced by another. Such laws cannot and should not be respected. It is like the salt that Christ referred to. If the salt should lose its savor and its strength, it should be cast away. Science exists so that man may live well and that there should be an abundance of all things. But if this science, instead of being a gift of God, should become a source of destruction to the human race, then it should be put aside. A man can live without science, enjoying all the things that nature provides, but with no spirit of compassion and respect for the lives of others, life on earth would be inexorably destroyed. God does not destroy anyone, but man with the aid of science could destroy himself and his fellows. Do not seek the salvation of your soul through science. If this were a means of spiritual progress, on this false basis, men would have arrived in hell long ago. The possession of scientific knowledge has no significance. Without it many could lead a spiritual life, but with it millions will meet nothing but affliction. Of what use is knowledge that used a whole people as guinea pigs, killing thousands, destroying innocent people and bringing grief to those Japanese cities whose names remain as milestones on the road to destruction? It is to no avail. All of us who travel through space, men from different planets, are moved when we see those cities and never tire of saying that here was where the first blow of brute power struck the earth and its inhabitants. Here are the paths which lead to Armageddon. Here Christian people crucify Jesus again and proclaim the supremacy of the beast who is to rule the earth. It is a pity that human beings have insufficient scientific knowledge to dominate all nature, and not be as poor as they are now. Since science is a great evil for them, it would be better to live without it, because then they would at least live. It is preferable to live in ignorance and allow others to live than for all to be drowned as a result of a little knowledge. They worship Christ in vain and fruitlessly pay homage to Him. The only thing that He wishes is that they should love one another. Man should not pray so much with pretty words. God is not moved by rhetoric. Rather should they make a constant prayer of their own lives and their love for their neighbor. There is yet time to save the world. An opportunity is always given to him that repents. There is no criminal who cannot be pardoned. If the crime is great, God's love is greater still. If man needed time to be pardoned, God could make a fraction of a second into an eternity. Divine acts are not subordinate to time and space. This is the reason why some criminals, in a moment of repentance, become saints and martyrs. For an instant they departed from the ways of evil with all the power of their heart, and by divine action this second's repentance was made permanent. If God cares so much for a single soul, should he not care that much more for humanity? Therefore pay more attention to spiritual things and use science as a means of explaining them.